Hello everyone. Welcome to today's session of Markets Monday. My name is Felix Ocheng, as usual, your host on Monday. We talk about what's moving markets, how markets have opened, what is it that we're looking up to this week. As an investor, this keeps you posted on generally what should be the market mood for Monday in the morning. Joining me in today's show is Eric Asuma, who's also our CEO at HISA Technologies. Eric, welcome to the chat.
Thanks, Felix. Looking forward to a great week. I think a lot happened last week, but I think this week I'm looking forward to a lot of things happening, both locally and globally. Thanks for welcoming.
Yes. I think this week is definitely going to be better. And in case you're wondering, in case you're new to this show, one of the things that you can do is check out HISA. We released a very interesting newsletter this morning. It will always be there on Monday morning, so you can be sure to check on Substack and you can subscribe to the newsletter. It will be coming definitely to your email on Monday every morning by 8 a.m. Today, just maybe what we should start with. There are a lot of news that are coming in from the markets today, but I'll start with something interesting. Eric, talk about Nation Media Group. Nation Media Group had announced a few weeks ago on 25th February, actually, that they announced that the board had resolved a share buyback. Share buybacks are very interesting things where a company decides to buy off a little bit of shares on the market. And then now over the weekend, that is on 29th of May, on Saturday, Nation Media gave in more information on the share buyback. Eric, I know you've been following on Nation Media. You'd want to mention something onto that.
Interesting. I think the last time we spoke about the impact of the share price and the share buyback plan, I think what we said is that it was hard to predict or to give a call in terms of where we expect the share price to be. But at the time when they made the initial announcement about the share buyback plan, at the time, I think over a period of 1 or 2 weeks, the share rallied from around 12 shillings to about 25 shillings at the time. But at the time, they did not disclose plans around the share buyback plan. And what we discussed at the time is we await for the share buyback plan. They give out the details. Once they give out the details, it will be an easier decision for investors to make in terms of where they expect the share price. So over the weekend, they announced the share buyback plan at a price of 25 shillings per ordinary share. I think they issued more details around how that will pan out. And what stood out for me from the plan is that they plan to make the purchases from open market, that's through the NFC. And then this is also subject to shareholder approval at their next AGM, which will be held on Friday, 25th June, a month from now. Something that has remained the same is that it's what they'll be buying back is 10% of the issued shares, about 20.7 million shares. And I think they have already received regulatory approval. That's CMA approved the buyback plan a few weeks ago. What they also announced is that the repurchased shares will be classified as treasury stocks or treasury shares and these shares will no longer get dividends. Voting rights are not included in the card, and they will not be included in calculating earnings per share. And I mentioned about the 25% per ordinary share. So I think for me, what I'm looking forward to, I think maybe this is a question to investors and Felix, should we expect now the share price to go up a bit, given that they have made details of the share buyback plan? The counter is, when you look at HISA app, I think the counter is trading at... let me just check. On Friday, the counter closed at around 16.85, and it was up 2.37%. So I think given that they've already made announcement, and the most important thing is the maximum buyback price, which is at 25. My thinking is the share price should rally in the course of this week. Should even hit up to 25 or thereabout. Think after they have effected the share, the buyback plan, it should again stabilize and go back to the current levels. But I think the main reason that NMG is conducting the share buyback plan is that they think the company stock is undervalued at the moment, and it will be a good time to buy back more of its shares from the open market. So that I think these people have, NMG is a very liquid company. What I've always mentioned before is that when you look at the most of the NSE listed companies, NMG is one of those companies that has very little debt, little or no debt actually. So I think they have some bit of cash reserves to spend on this buyback plan. So I think expectations going forward is that I think we usually expect the NMG's share price to rally in the course of this week. So positive things for the counter this week, given that I've already made announcements or plans about the buyback plan. So I think we should expect much more from them, from the share price in the course of the week.
Eric, very interesting. I know one of the things that a lot of guys are really wondering from Nation Media Group is will they reissue the shares that have been bought from the market? That's a very interesting observation that I know a lot of investors are probably pondering over. Eric, you know, NMG has come in with issuing, and we saw them, we saw the company give guys a bonus issue last financial year. Do you think this is something that's going to be concurrent? Because if they're buying them back at a premium, and then at the same time, they're coming in and issuing another bonus or a scrip dividend. For those of you who don't understand how a scrip dividend works, is a scrip dividend is when a company, instead of giving you a dividend, cash dividend, they give you a share dividend. So Eric, do you think Nation Media is likely to continue giving investors scrip dividend over time? Because I think it's going to become a very, very awesome, it will become a very interesting scenario if they come in and buy back the shares, because 10% relatively, it's almost similar to, if you're looking at it from another range, it's almost similar to the shares that NMG issued previously on the bonus issue. What would be your take? Do you think the company is likely to continue issuing bonuses? I think that's something that I know a lot of guys would be interested in. And also, just before you touch on that, on the share price rally, for those of you who are checking, and you can be able to get this data on HISA app, you can check, Nation Media has rallied today, 12,000 shares traded. It's touching a new high for the week. It's opened at a new high actually for the week. I think also 1 month high of about 1860, something that's very interesting. It's gone up 18 shillings and 60 cents. That's 7.83% higher than the price that it closed at last week. Eric, what's your take on that?
Interesting. About the scrip dividends, I think in December of last year, we saw Nation Media Group that was about 19 million bonus shares after they got the approval at the AGM, which was held in June. I think part of their strategy, instead of now giving out dividends, I think I foresee a situation whereby they'll, this part of their strategy, I think, to try make the investors happy or the shareholders happy. For me, the question is, for how long will they do this? For how long will they continue doing this? When you look at their core business, which is the publishing side, which is with print being their bread and butter for a big part of the years that they've been on operations. When you look at their business has significantly been affected by the pandemic, with a drastic drop, you think, in advertising and circulation volumes. And I think we saw it's been bad for them. But in as much as they have all these reserves, they are debt free. I think for me the main question is what investors expect is growth in terms of what are they going to do next to bring back the kind of revenues that they used to enjoy with the print. Think in the latest results, there was a massive drop in profit, about 94%. It's been dropping consistently for the last couple of years, and part of the management strategy is around monetizing their digital audience through paywalls. I'm not sure how that will work in the long run, but I think the management is pretty optimistic that it's part of a new strategy that they'll use to monetize their digital content. But I think what they should give out, I think, is particularly how the numbers look like from the digital side of things. I think I've been in the I have a few insights with regards to how the digital publishing works, and honestly, it's a market that's hard to compete when you have the likes of Google, Facebook, Twitter, and I don't expect much from their digital publishing side. So, and their strategy at the moment with regards to trying to show up the share price through these buybacks, yes, it may work, but for me, when I look at it from an investor who's looking for a very high growth sort of company, I don't expect much from the digital side of things.
Very interesting, Eric, when you mentioned that you don't expect a lot from the digital side of things, because I know that's one thing investors have really been optimistic about. I know most of us have really been wondering on the outlook that we're also expecting from the AGM would be on the digital outlook for Nation Media Group. That's something that investors would really be concerned about, at least just the general outlook. What is it that we're supposed to expect? I know those are very strong questions that investors are definitely going to be asking of the week at Nation Media Group. Now, looking on to another aspect of the market, Eric, last week the performance of the market was pretty low. It was pretty flat, though still on the positive edge. We saw the NSE All Share Index, the 25 and the 20 Share Index, which are usually the benchmark indices of the exchange, gain. The NSE 20 Share Index was up 3.28 basis points. The All Share Index was up 6.98. The NSE 25 was up about 126.26 points. That is some that's very huge, but also very negligible when you're looking at it from the 25 share index perspective. Giving guys a little bit of intel on how the market to market the markets performed over time. We're looking at the turnover for the exchange also being very impressive. Turnover for the week was up about to 4.9 billion. This is against the 3.1 billion of share worth of share that were traded on week 20. I know that's a lot of things that guys are really looking into. The good thing is Safaricom didn't really take 80% of market activity as usual. However, still impressive, Safaricom was the week's top performer, having about 52.09% of the week's traded value. That's 62 million shares for Safaricom, covering 52%. The total value of shares of Safaricom that were traded during the week stood at 2.59 billion shares. Activity was also high on the fixed income segment of the market, with about 34.9 billion worth of bonds transacted on the market, as compared to 21.6 billion, which was posted on the previous week. Just to touch on something, on the gainers end, we saw BOC Kenya gain about 10.26%. On the loser side, we saw East African Cables is actually racing to zero. Eric, it's very interesting. Okay, the race to zero, what we usually mean by the race to zero is when a stock has constantly been declining for over a period of about 12 months or so. So East African Cables it's constantly being on the loser side, just the same way Uchumi has been racing to zero. And zero is not a flat price of zero. It could be 0.99. That is usually something that would be considered as zero. Stocks that are usually racing to zero, you should be cautious when trading over them, because most of the time you might find that these stocks literally could wipe out your entire investment. We saw guys, when we were with Davis the other time, we were talking about how stocks like Uchumi and Mumias, guys have the shares, the investment totally wiped out about 99% of the investment traded on that. So that's one thing that as an investor I would really, really encourage you to just always have a little bit of a look on. I know, Eric, one of the things that really caught investors' eye was KenGen. You'd want to mention something on that. And then I'm also seeing that Bank of Kigali have released their results this morning, something that I would be touching on to in the next, once you touch a little bit on KenGen.
Okay, I think great insights on local counters and the performance over the last few weeks. Maybe my comments on before I jump into Kenjen, I think you mentioned about East African Cables race to zero. The company is more of correlated to Transcentury. Felix, before we jump into Kenjen, do you think there's a correlation between what's happening at Transcentury and given they are more of I think they have they have common shareholders and probably Transcentury I think has a stake in East African Cables. Do you think what's happening at Transcentury has an impact on East African Cables?
Definitely, absolutely. You know, I think it's the other way around. Transcentury, I think, is a subsidiary of East African Cables. So it would be very interesting just to see how the two companies perform. You see, one of the things that companies need to really learn, and what I think global markets and global companies are usually doing better than our local companies, it's just the issue of corporate governance. You see, East African Cables and Transcentury have not released their financial results for the financial year that ended on 31st of December. We're almost halfway into the year and these companies are yet to release their results. So investors are constantly speculating. And if you're looking at the historical performance over the past 5 years for this company, they've not really been impressive. I would note that East African Cables is really facing solid challenges in terms of even the manufacturing, where we're seeing a lot of goods coming in at a cheaper price. So definitely their sales are not performing. So there are a lot of challenges that they're really facing, but I think they can actually do better. On what's happening to Transcentury, I think Transcentury, it would really be hard to talk about Transcentury. It's more of those closed companies, but they're always bad news because they would come in one day and tell us, like last year when they said they were planning on voluntary delisting from the exchange, then when you're expecting them to give the date of notice, they go silent. A month later, they come and tell you, you know what? Oh, we halted that plan of voluntary delisting from the exchange. So what's really happening with Transcentury would really be a main challenge. But you see, there are two sides of the coin to look at it from. You might look at it from the point that East African Cables would be, because if they're subsidiary, then it means that East African Cables has a majority of the shareholding. So it would mean that either it's the majority shareholders who are really not willing to give investors an opportunity as well, or they don't just have their house in order. There's a lot of ways that you can look at it from. But yes, you're right. Whatever is happening on East African Cables and Transcentury, these are related.
Interesting. I think as we move on to Kenjen, it's been a mixed bag for Kenjen. I think that they made some good announcements over the last couple of weeks about, I think they began they said they will begin drilling the Djibouti power project this month, in this coming month, that's June. That's positive news for the investors. I think they also made an announcement in April that they'll be commencing work on the 83.3 megawatts geothermal plant. Positive news. I think they had already begun plans about how to the Ethiopia geothermal tender projects. Good news. I think on the other side of the coin is that I think there was news in the media that Kenya Power owes them some huge sums of money, and they had already they were in talks with the government to see how Kenya Power could remit those funds. And what we've seen is the share price has really gone down. If I'm not wrong, it could be at the lowest, at its lowest, it's at its all-time low. Today, when I look at through HISA, Kenjen is already down 0.25%, and it's already trading at 3.97. I think the lowest it's ever hit is, at around 3.95. That was last week. In terms of expectations on my end, I don't expect much from the counter, but maybe Felix, what are your thoughts about this particular counter, given what's happening, the decline in the share price?
Well, personally for me, I think Kenjen really has very strong fundamentals. If there's any company on the market, some of the companies that have very strong fundamentals would be companies like Kenjan. But the challenge is usually, you know, a business is as good as its customers. If the customer, if your main client is not really performing, then it would really in turn affect you. It's just the same thing. If Kenya Power is not performing on the market, and just not on the market, KPLC's touch has not really been only on the stock market. The company's financials have been devastating, literally, having a constant decline over time. So, and then they continue owing Kenjan. They're not paying their debts. So, and Kenjan is constantly investing. You know, a lot of guys have thought that maybe the products, the project that Kenjan has probably been undertaking in areas like Ethiopia and Djibouti might bring Kenjan more revenue. But come on, those projects are worth probably about 700 and something million. You mm-hmm. can't compare that too close to the 7 billion that Kenya Power owes Kenjan.
Mm-hmm.
So guys might be buying, but you know, we've always bought it with the hope of things would be better and Kenya Power will one day pay its debts. But just how soon is one day? You know, it's still a lot of challenges. And I believe that there's a report that Davis had actually shared some time back over Kenjan, something that guys might be able to have a look into. He had a look of both sides of the coin, the positive edge and also the negative edge of both Kenjan. There's also the one for Kenya Power, the entire energy sector. That is something that I know would definitely be good. So we can have that discussion as well with Davis on Wednesday during the Bulls, Bears and Whiskey. So that's something that I know investors would really be looking into. I don't know if you have any comments, but that would be my thoughts for Kenjan.
Interesting. I think that's it from me from a local market standpoint. Maybe we can now go to the what's happening across the globe. Is there anything that you have left from the local?
Yes. Just before we go into that, guys, Bank of Kigali, that's BK Group PLC, has released very impressive results. I think the company's performance, I think, is one of the best that we're seeing. BK Group is really promising. I'm actually thinking it might be time an investor would take a look onto Bank of Kigali. And once again, guys, whatever stock we talk about here, please note that this is not an investment advice and you need to ensure that you're doing your personal research for the stock before you can be able to buy it. Bank of Kigali, we're seeing that the net interest income for the company is up about 15.8%. The provisions are down about 6.3%. The EPS for the company is up 79.3%. I think this is something that guys are really, really going to be looking into. The payout ratio for the dividend, if approved by investors, the AGM is slated for the 16th of June of next month, would be about 50%. I think this is one thing that I know a lot of guys would really be wondering. But Bank of Kigali has really, really been outstanding. We're seeing the net interest income for the company has also gone up for the first quarter. It's gone up about 31.9%. Shareholder equity, the returns, it's about 19.5%. I think that's one thing that we're seeing in there. Literally above average in Rwanda, because Rwanda, the banking sector average is about 11.5%, and Bank of Kigali is giving guys returns of about 19.5%. That's one thing that I know. And also net total assets for the company have also gone up at about 16.8%. That's year on year. That's Q1 2020 compared to Q1 2021. So I think that's one thing. And I think technically Bank of Kigali would really be outstanding, Eric. These are some of the banks that I know a lot of people might really want to invest in. The main challenge that I know most people have really had over time with investing in East African markets has really been on, the main thing has been on repatriation of dividends. That's one. I know that's technically the main challenge that guys are always really facing. And also considering that most of these settlements for these companies are really done not by the local market, but also outside on the market. That's one thing that I know. Sorry, on the market back in Rwanda. the share registrar and everything else is held on that side. So that's one thing that I know it's going to be challenging. But I think also for some of the things that are really supporting Bank of Rwanda, we're seeing that Bank of Kigali, sorry, these things are challenging. You know, Bank of Rwanda, Bank of Kigali, and so it's a very small country. So I think that they should just decide and merge the two banks and bring back a better listing. Bank of Rwanda, which is a national bank, and also Bank of Kigali, a very interesting company to look into. The profit for the year, that's the profit for the quarter for the period ended 31st March 2021. It's also up as well, about 11 billion. That is Rwandese franc. So you can be able to do that conversion. But one of the things that really stood out is the EPS for the company. I think that's one thing that a lot of investors would really want to take a look into. So we'll continue watching on to Bank of Kigali. And in case you have any concerns, please. The company, I think one of the easiest companies that you can always reach out to the financial team is Bank of Kigali. If you have any concerns, I know you can always be able to just do them an email and they'll be able to definitely respond over time. Comparing the performance of Bank of Kigali to our local banks, I think maybe we can do that comparison and share that out within the day. It would be something that would be interesting. The results have just reached us. And so that's one thing that I know we'd really be looking into. The main challenge that I know a lot of guys have really faced on Bank of Kigali would be, apart from the dividend repatriation, I know the challenge would also be on getting the financial stuff like AGM, which a lot of guys are really, really used to. But you know now, guys, things like AGM are going online. So you might really want to just try, and also you can actually diversify your portfolio. That's one thing that you can always look into. I'm just checking finally, as before we go to global markets, checking on the year-to-year performance of Bank of Kigali. Bank of Kigali, the one-year returns, if you bought Bank of Kigali in May last year, you should be about 18.18% on your portfolio. If you bought Bank of Kigali on the 1st of January, on the 2nd of January 2021, your portfolio is actually up about 26.83%. 3 months, Bank of Kigali, the three-month performance is at 21.2%. And the six-month return, this is the catch. The six-month return for Bank of Kigali is at about 92.59%. Bank of Kigali currently ranks at second in terms of year-to-date performance on the Nairobi Securities Exchange. So that's definitely a stock that guys would really want to look into. So that's one thing that I know we'd really be looking into. We are going to share with you guys that comparison probably before the end of the day. So keep it just keep out watching on various platforms. On the HISA platform, if you have the app, download it. We'll be able to share it. If you don't have the app, you can download HISA. We'll be able to share this comparison with you in app on the HISA app. That's one thing that I know guys will be looking into. Eric, back to you on global markets.
Great insights on Bank of Kigali. Impressive results, I think, from the Q1, which I think essentially gives out the outlook of the Rwandan economy at this particular period. In this particular period, I think, when we're in the middle of a pandemic. So as we look into the global market, I think a lot has happened over the last few days. Maybe I'll just give a few highlights of what I've been following up on, both from a geopolitical standpoint and from a market standpoint. I think major news that came out over the weekend is that Iran had fired the central bank governor, and apparently the central bank governor is also a candidate in the country's presidential elections. And the president actually fired him because, look, you cannot be a central bank governor at the same time. You cannot remain the head of a central bank, which affects the monetary decisions, policies, and exchange rates. And at the same time, you want to run for the presidential elections. From what I'm seeing across the global media is that's going to have a huge impact on the current currency, and it's something that we also be keenly watching on. other news that came about is that I think, as for those who've been following across what's been happening across the global markets, there's been a shortage of semiconductors for several months now, and we've seen a number of car manufacturers, electrical manufacturers, have to postpone or even lengthen their periods of when they'll do some of their deliveries. And that has affected production for a number of companies across the globe, mainly companies in the US, Europe, and all that. I think the major news that came out over the weekend is that the CEO of Intel, that's Paul Gassinger, said that the shortage of these semiconductors, I think, could even last for up to three years. And he said, I think given that people are now switching to the lack of chips is also appearing due to people have massively switched to working and studying from their homes. And part of, I think, there's a CEO, I can't remember the particular company, but last week, one of these major electrical companies, a listed electrical companies, he mentioned that from where they sit at, I think it's a company called Logitech. He said that from where they sit at, he mentioned that this shortage could last between six to 10 months, and up to 10 months. And it's going to have a huge, huge impact on the tech and auto industry. I think we've seen the likes of Apple issuing some notices in terms of how they expect this to affect their production and even shipping of laptops and phones. The other thing that I thought, not from a geopolitical standpoint, Boris Johnson got married to his fiancée, that's Kairi Simons, in a private wedding over the weekend. And why is it significant? It's significant because it's the first time since 2022, that the head of UK's government has wedded while holding in office. Johnson is 56. And his new fiancée is 33. That's something also worthwhile to mention from a political standpoint. The other thing that I thought, Felix, we can touch on is on crypto market. Still, it's been a bit shaky, and it's been a bit shaky over the last couple of weeks. And on Saturday, prices continue to fall, with Bitcoin dropping to below 35,000. And I think the major decline over the last few weeks, I think, as almost everyone is aware, is that the Chinese government had announced plans to crack down on digital assets. But over the last, and I think investors were a bit got into panicking. That's why there was a decline that even went up to around $30,000. But in the course of the week, some good news that came out is that PayPal announced actually that they are now allowing their users users to withdraw, to make withdrawals of Bitcoin and other crypto assets to third-party wallets, which I think that's what made now the price to stabilize. And the other major news that came out is that when the price of Bitcoin fell between 30 to 35,000, apparently the whales, these institutions and major whales, most of them got in at that price and accumulated Bitcoin's worth $2 billion. I think that was very, very significant, which essentially means that, look, the people who are active in the market, these people have their skin in the game, they're optimistic about the prices of Bitcoin in the long run, and they expect the prices of BTC to go up. I think for people who are new to the Bitcoin, we've had major crashes, and I think this is not something new. So I think for those who've been in the market for long enough, I think they saw the dip as a buying point. So that's why they went into some sort of a point where they could do a bit of accumulation. I think from a crypto market, that's it. Maybe Felix, something that you can add on?
Eric, also, you know, one of the things that investors really need to know is that China is not going to lift the ban. Actually, China has said that their fight on crypto assets is going to become, it's actually being empowered day by day. I know that's one thing that investors are probably concerned about, you know. But also on the other side, it could be that, because early in the year, there was news that China was trying to launch their own digital currency. So this could also be an opportunity for the government to cut out all these other cryptos and then just probably have a little bit of positive control on their own crypto. So that's one thing that I know investors are really going to be, they're technically going to be looking into. I think China, the government of China, which is has always been seen as a communist nation, China is really trying as much as it can to curb any financial risk that might hurt the local currency. So I know that's one thing that guys are constantly going to be looking into over time. So I'm really hoping that as investors, we could have a little bit of more, probably a little bit of more, how do you put it? A little bit of more analysis, so that guys can just have a little bit of, guys can have a lot of control. Because, you know, the same way, and I believe this is what every government wants, as much as everybody thinks that currencies need to be liberalized by having the crypto side and everything else left on to guys to probably just move around, I think it would really be interesting if we had a little bit of a formal, even if it's a global acceptance of cryptos, but we really need to agree that we need to have some form of control, because we are seeing cryptos being used to scam guys. There was the other, recently there was a coin that scammed guys and just put up their website that we can't scan you, we just scammed you and there's nothing that you can do about it. And please, this is not the other scam coin. There's another simple, cool, automatic money, which is called scam coin. But there was a coin recently, I'm just trying to remember the name, but that actually hit onto guys and guys lost a lot of money, close to $200 million. At the same time, we're seeing last week, the government of Dubai actually issued news. UAE issued a notice, a scam alert to a coin that was recently known as Dubai Coin, at least until the point before that notice came out, trying to tell guys that if you buy into this, it's going to be X and Y. You know, if these scams are coming in here, left, right, and center, then it means everybody with a computer can really be able to scam you with just their coin. So I think that's one thing. And you're seeing some of this, the urge to invest in cryptos is really affecting a lot of investors, because we are seeing even locally a lot of companies that are coming in left, right, and center are really trying to. Literally, they don't have any form of regulation, so it's really hard for you to know what is it that you're actually buying. That's one thing that I know a lot of guys are really going to be looking into. On to the performance of just other cryptos, we are seeing Ethereum was also down about 12%. Bitcoin similarly has been down, and the usual coin, Dogecoin, was also down. So I don't know. I don't know what's really happening. This is despite Elon Musk coming in and saying we are not selling, Tesla is not selling their Bitcoin. But then also at the same time, they're telling guys we can no longer accept Bitcoin as payment because of environmental concerns. So I think these are things that we're really going to be looking into and following it up over time. The blockchain system, the blockchain network, I think really still remains strong, something that investors will constantly be looking into as well. If you're investing on the crypto market, always just remember that crypto has one of the highest volatilities that we've seen in any, I don't know if I should call crypto an asset, but that would be something as well. I wouldn't want to be, I know a lot of guys have called them assets, non-assets, really depending on which angle you're taking it from, but that's one thing you'd be looking into. Eric, before we conclude, there's one thing that happened on the global space as we move away from crypto that we really need to talk about. I know we talked about this on Friday, but also looking at it from a standpoint, we are looking at Amazon buying MGM Studios. What really is the end game here? Amazon is getting everywhere, from healthcare. Amazon has been an online retailer to food stores, to shopping malls. Where are we really seeing Amazon? Do you think Amazon would beat Netflix by taking over MGM? Because probably they might be head on with Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. But Netflix, do you think that is something that they would take over? Probably we can touch on that as we close today's discussion.
I think when you look at the play that where Amazon sits, I think it's Amazon is, apart from the e-commerce, they are a major content business. And I think what this means, and I think we mentioned this in part during Friday's chat, is that the kind of value that this adds to Amazon is, it's extremely much more than the value that they acquired it for. That's around $8.45 billion. Imagine what it means when Amazon controls the James Bond franchise, for those who watch movies. And not just the James Bond franchise, but some of the longest and most iconic movie franchises of all time. From the stats, I think, that were issued, MGM has a catalog of more than 4,000 films. I think there's so many. And out of all these, I think Amazon plans to integrate. I'm not sure if they'll keep this separate from the Amazon Prime, but I believe if they want to integrate this into the Amazon Prime, that would be a massive win for them. And I think that when Amazon made this acquisition, from their release, what they mentioned is that the main reason they actually did this acquisition is on the, how do we call it, was on the IP that MGM holds, and from a content and even current productions and licensing agreements with other platforms. Imagine how long it would take for Amazon to start producing movies or TV shows based on MGM's IP rights, like James Bond, Rocky, Pink Panther, and all these others. So I think from the industry, from what analysts have been trying to say from the media, is that this is going to have a lot of implications for many players in the movie and the TV business. And I think it's going to trigger a lot of pressure for streaming services without their own production norms to consolidate even some of this largest stock up and even content. So when you look at the kind of pressure this is going to have on, say, the likes of Disney, AT&T, Discovery, Netflix, AMC, even Fox, it's going to be massive. I think it's a win for Amazon. I think it was a good deal for them. And I think that has even made the share price of Amazon to go up since they made this announcement, and which means investors are a bit of optimistic about this particular acquisition. But I think also what we also have to note is that this deal hasn't been closed yet, and it will take some bit of approvals from the US regulators. But I think it's a good deal for them.
All right, that's something that would really be coming in, because we're seeing Amazon is now called Amazon is everything. That's how analysts are talking, because if you're looking at various sectors of the S&P 500, if you're looking at online stores, third-party seller services, cloud services, that is tech, looking at it from physical stores, Amazon is almost everywhere in all of this. So that's something that I know we'd really be looking up to. Eric, any last words as we end today's session, generally on the market performance and anything that you'd want investors to know about?
Nothing much. I think I think banks have already, what you mentioned is that from the results of banks, from the numbers that banks have given out, I think essentially means that the economy is, there's some bit of optimism in the economy. So things have begun to improve. But I think from the government issued a notice over the weekend that the extension of curfew. I don't know what's that, I don't know the impact of that on local businesses, but I think things are trying to come to back to where they are. But I think a lot is expected locally. What we should expect locally, I think, is on maybe on the news site, on the news, on the. I think we should expect a few announcements from local corporates in the course of the week. Globally, a lot's happening. We should expect a lot from. Biden last week made public the $6 trillion budget. I think that's part of something that we should also look at the impact of that on the U.S. stocks. But I think generally that's it from me. Nothing much. We can maybe share more details on Wednesday's Bulls and Bears event.
All right, guys, I believe that's it for us. Personally, what I'd really be looking into this week, I'm really hoping to see information from Kenya Reinsurance Corporation, that's Kenya Re, and also WPP Scan Group. These are companies that had delayed their results and actually promised investors that they would give out the results before 31st May. Today's 31st May and we get to see something, because if they said that they would release the results, Kenya Re said before 31st May, and WPP Scan Group actually indicated that by 31st May, which means we should have had from WPP before at least latest by yesterday, but nothing is really from these companies. I think it's turning into a challenge. Just once again, when we talked about corporate governance earlier on, affecting some of the companies listed on the exchange. Companies like WPP, which have really been strong in terms of corporate governance, but now looking, and Kenya Re as well, if they're being affected by the usual ping pong that we've seen companies like East African Cables and Transcentury pull off investors, I think it's going to be quite a challenge. But let's hope we get something from these companies. The day is yet to come to an end, so we can't call it shots yet. We just have to wait. Probably we can wait for these results. If they're shared by end of day, we definitely will be touching on to that on Wednesday. But I believe that I'm really hoping that we either get, as a shareholder, because as an investor who's invested in Kenya, that's for me. I believe that it would be very interesting if the company would just let us know at least the performance. I know that's something that guys are really hoping to look into, because it's halfway into the year, guys. The financial year that ended on 31st December 2020, it's 6 months. By tomorrow, it will be close to 6 months into the year, and investors are trading on speculation. So that's one thing I believe guys from Capital Markets Authority and guys from the NSE and also the companies who are listening in can actually be able to follow up into that. But all in all, remember that this podcast will be available to you guys through the HISA app. So you definitely would want to download HISA, sign up, and just once you just sign up on your account, go to the podcast section. You can actually be able to comment, share this as well, and also give us your insights on the discussion platform. There's a lot that's going on, guys creating polls, analysts asking you questions about what you'd want them to ask companies in the investor briefing that they go to. There's a lot that you can actually be able to gain from the HISA app. It's not only about markets, it's a lot that is in-house. And also, you can also check out our latest newsletter, which we shared this morning on Substack, that gave you guys a lot of, that we really hope that would be giving you a little bit of an outlook, not only on educative matters, but also just bringing you a lot more information to your doorstep, to your phone. That's one thing that I know we'd really be looking into. Thank you all, and have a lovely week ahead. It's a chilly morning in Nairobi. Remember to always stay safe, sanitize, and see you guys again next week on Monday for Markets Monday. Bye-bye.